Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're really peeling back the layers on a book that uses the high seas not just as a backdrop, but as a kind of crucible for human relationships. It's Sophie Elmhurst's utterly absorbing book, A Marriage at Sea, Obsession, Love, and Shipwreck.
Yeah, it's quite something. It's definitely not your average travelogue and certainly not a sailing manual. This book takes the terrifying isolation of the deep ocean and basically turns it into the ultimate test chamber for romantic love. Mm. It's a really rigorous psychological look at that crucial dividing line, the one between profound devotion and destructive fixation.
And what I find fascinating is how it just strips away the fantasy. It forces us and you listening to confront a really terrifying question. Can the intensity of love truly justify abandoning all reason, ignoring every warning sign, basically throwing responsibility overboard?
Exactly. And that feels particularly relevant today, doesn't it? Because it's such a powerful critique of that modern obsession with sort of radical middle class escapism.
Right. The whole quit your job, sell the house, sail away dream.
Precisely. Yeah. The fantasy of finding yourself out there. Elmhurst shows what happens when that romantic idealization just crashes headlong into harsh, practical, sometimes life-threatening realities.
You know, we often hear the success stories from those kinds of adventures, but this book, it really focuses on people who made devastating choices. So to navigate these complex waters, we're relying on the author, Sophie Elmhurst. She's an accomplished British long-form journalist, right? Known for her incredibly detailed feature writing.
Yeah, for places like The Guardian and The Economist's 1843. Mm. And what makes her, I think, the perfect guide here is that she doesn't come at these stories as a sailor herself or even a survival expert. She approaches them as a relentless investigator. Mm. Her journalistic background, it gives her this unprecedented access. We're talking deep dives into diaries, logbooks, even unpublished manuscripts, personal family archives, stuff others just hadn't seen or maybe didn't piece together in the same way.
Wow, that level of detail is critical, isn't it? Because it lets her look beyond the simple headline, the simplified myth that often surrounds these stories.
Exactly. Her perspective is defined by this psychological clarity. She manages to balance a profound empathy for these people who are seeking freedom and meaning with a really objective analysis of why. Why did intelligent, capable individuals make decisions that led to catastrophe, or in one case, near-death trauma?
So she gets past the simple hero villain thing.
Yeah, she moves us away from that and focuses much more on the complexities of human motivation, especially under extreme stress.
Okay, let's unpack this book then, because it sounds pretty ambitious. The central idea isn't just one tragic story, right? It's more like a synthesis of true narratives.
That's right. It's designed to really deconstruct that romantic myth of life at sea. It looks at two fundamentally different couples, but puts them under the same thematic umbrella.
And the structure sounds really powerful because of that contrast. You get these two different psychological studies side by side.
Absolutely. So on one hand, we're looking at the ultimate tragedy, the story of Julian and Juliet Fairfax. Their idealism and, frankly, unpreparedness proved fatal.
Okay.
And then, completely differently, we have the incredible story of Maurice and Marilyn Bailey. Their survival hinged on relentless pragmatism.
It sounds like an exploration of fate, almost. So the book's core ambition is using these two extraordinary but really opposing cases to shed light on more universal truths about identity, risk, what we owe our partners.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't just ask what happened to their boats, the physical events. It delves deeply into why the choices they made, the internal landscape of their relationships, define their drastically different fates.
Okay, let's start with the Fairfax tragedy then. You said it's the starkest warning about passion outstripping planning.
Yeah, I think so. It introduces us to Julian and Juliet Fairfax. They were a middle-aged British couple, this was back in the 1980s, who decided they just had enough of conventional life.
Hmm, relatable in a way.
Totally. And their solution was the grand sailing adventure, a really romantic, almost cinematic vision of escaping the ordinary world, just the two of them together.
But their story takes a dark turn.
It devolves quite quickly into this terrifying study of insularity. Their connection, which was incredibly intense and isolating, transformed into what Elmhurst actually describes as a shared delusion.
A shared delusion. Wow.
Yeah. They essentially built this bubble around themselves, so tight that their shared fantasy became their shared reality. They seemed to confuse the dream of sailing, the idea of it, with the actual ability to survive a crisis at sea.
And that's where the red flags become so obvious from the outside looking in. They failed because they rejected external reality, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They ignored warning signs from family, from friends, even from the experienced maritime community. And when you're making a huge life-altering decision like that, sailing across an ocean, starting a risky business, whatever, rejecting competent outside counsel can become fatal.
That's the really chilling takeaway from their story then. Trying to escape the ordinary led them into this extraordinary prison of their own making.
Precisely. Their deep love in Elmhurst makes it clear it was real and consuming, just couldn't compensate for a profound lack of practical competence, training, realistic planning.
Yeah.
It wasn't there. The author is pretty unequivocal. Passion is just not a substitute for preparation.
Wow. Okay. So if the Fairfax tragedy is a stark warning about misplaced idealism, then the Baileys. They must represent the complete opposite end of that spectrum. Tell us about Maurice and Marilyn Bailey.
They were, on the surface, a seemingly ordinary working-class couple. But in 1973, their yacht was struck and sunk by a sperm whale.
By a whale? Seriously?
Yeah, incredible. And this left them stranded on a tiny inflatable life raft for a truly staggering 117 days in the Pacific Ocean.
117 days? That's almost 4 months.
Yeah.
In a life raft. Their survival can't have been about grand heroic moments. It must have been about just grinding psychological endurance.
Absolutely. Their endurance relied on immense resilience, yes.
Right.
But also this incredibly pragmatic, almost brutal codependency. They didn't rely on romantic ideals to keep going. They relied on relentless routine.
Routine. Adrift at sea.
Yes. They developed incredibly rigid schedules. They focused solely on what Elmhurst calls micro goals. Tiny, achievable tasks to impose some kind of order on the absolute chaos and, well, to ward off madness.
Give us an example of a micro goal. I mean, we talk about breaking down big projects, but what does that look like when you're adrift and literally starving?
Well, it meant things like managing the exact tiny amount of daily rainwater they could collect in a scrap of canvas, or the meticulous, probably agonizing effort of bending a safety pin just right so it could function as a fishhook.
Oh, my goodness.
It wasn't about we will survive. It was about we will survive the next hour, and then we will catch the next fish. It's survival through a functional, intimate partnership. Utterly stripped of romance, focused purely on existence.
And the aftermath. That's where the story gets really complicated, you mentioned. They get rescued, they become instant heroes, write a bestseller. But it wasn't a simple happy ending. If they were famous and maybe made some money, didn't their dream kind of pay off in the end?
That's the deep irony the book explores. Yes, they survived. But Maurice's underlying obsession with the sea, the thing that motivated the original trip in the first place, it seems it prevented them from ever truly settling down on land afterwards.
So the rescue didn't cure him?
No, if anything, it just fed the compulsion. He felt he had to keep going back to sea. The ordeal didn't end the obsession. It arguably intensified it.
So the shipwreck, it never really ended for them psychologically. It became a state they kind of inhabited for the rest of their lives, locking their marriage into this cycle of shared trauma and restlessness, forever tied to the very thing that almost killed them.
That seems to be the case. And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, you know, both couples offer these profound lessons about the true nature of marriage, especially under extreme duress.
Mm.
What kept the Baileys alive wasn't conventional romantic love as we often picture it. It was this functional, intimate survival unit. It suggests that resilience in relationships, especially under pressure, requires maybe specialization, distinct roles, and a relentless pact for mutual existence.
So it raises the question, doesn't it? Is the most important thing in a long-term partnership not necessarily intense passion, but maybe shared competency and just sheer determination?
I think the book strongly suggests that, yeah. And then there's that theme of the tyranny of the dream, which is really epitomized by Maurice Bailey.
Yeah.
His initial dream of escape, which might have seemed inspiring at first, it became a kind of destructive obsession that consumed their entire existence, dictating their choices long, long after their rescue.
And that societal pressure you mentioned, the burden of the survival myth. Elmhurst shows that huge gap between the heroic public face the Baileys had to put on and the private reality of deep, lasting psychological scars. Society wants a neat, triumphant story, right?
Right. But trauma is never tidy. It just isn't.
Which brings us back, sort of full circle, to the absolute necessity of competence. The Fairfax tragedy really drives home that crystal clear point. Romantic passion, devotion, it cannot, under any circumstances, substitute for practical preparation and a realistic look at risks and your own capabilities.
You just can't love your way out of a sinking boat. It's as simple and as brutal as that.
The book seems full of these powerful, succinct ideas about the human condition, often distilled into these really brilliant core statements. What really stands out for you when you revisit the text?
Well, for the Fairfaxes, this one really encapsulates the destructive bubble they created. Their love had become a kind of shared madness, beautiful and terrible in equal measure. It just perfectly captures that insular dynamic where reinforcing each other's fantasy outweighs any practical reality check.
That's powerful. And the profound irony of their specific form of escapism. In trying to escape the ordinary world, they had created an extraordinary prison of their own making. They essentially traded the predictable constraints of, say, suburban life for the claustrophobic, life-threatening constraints of their own disastrous choices.
Mm-hmm. And then for the Baileys, the secret to those 117 days is maybe summarized here. Their survival was not an act of heroism, but an accumulation of 100,000 tiny, mundane tasks performed in the face of utter despair.
Right. It emphasizes the power of routine, that relentless discipline over some kind of dramatic courage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't about one big act. It was about countless small ones. And maybe most poignantly, to illustrate that painful marital imbalance that seemed to define the Baileys' later life, there's this quote. "The sea was Maurice's great love and his great antagonist. For Marilyn, it was simply the place where Maurice was."
Oh, wow. That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
About loyalty, but also about how one partner's obsession can completely define the life path of the other.
It really does. And these lessons, they're shockingly applicable, even if, you know, your biggest risk today is trying a new commute route or tackling a big work project.
How so?
Well, take the Fairfax lesson on healthy relationship boundaries. When you, or maybe you and a partner, are considering a major emotionally driven life change, quitting jobs, moving abroad, starting a huge venture, the book kind of urges you to maintain connections outside that primary relationship. Seek external perspective. Don't let your shared excitement become a shared delusion.
That makes sense. Don't get trapped in the echo chamber.
And
I find the Baileys' psychological technique incredibly useful, actually, for managing overwhelming professional challenges.
The micro goals.
Yeah. If you're facing a massive project deadline or maybe trying to overhaul your fitness routine, something that feels huge, don't focus on the impossible final destination. Focus on creating routine and achieving small, immediate micro goals. It imposes order on the chaos. It's the art of managing the manageable, right?
Absolutely. And for risk and transition management in general, the book acts as this powerful reality check. If you're thinking about a major transition, you have to separate the romantic ideals from the practical requirements.
So dream big, but plan realistically.
Exactly. Ensure that big life shifts include realistic planning, specific training if needed, and a verifiable support system. You need to verify competence, your own, your partner's, your plans before you commit your life or your life savings to the passion.
And finally, we really have to remember the application regarding trauma. The book is such a vital reminder that the story doesn't end with the rescue or the success or overcoming the immediate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The long-term psychological fallout of trauma, whether it's from a literal shipwreck or maybe a devastating professional failure or a health crisis, it requires patience, empathy, and recognizing that the survivor's internal shipwreck often continues long after the physical ordeal is over.
That's such an important point. So wrapping this up, what's the final insight you take away from this really remarkable deep dive into these contrasting survival narratives?
What genuinely surprised me, I think, was how both couples, the Fairfaxes and the Baileys, despite their completely different approaches and outcomes, ended up in a kind of prison constructed by their relationship to the sea. One couple died because of this idealistic rejection of reality. The other survived through a gritty, pragmatic acceptance of reality. Yet both seemed equally haunted by it in the end. It really hammers home that true adventure requires competence, not just passion, and maybe a deep, humble respect for the unforgiving nature of the world.
That's a great takeaway. For me, I think the most valuable lesson is perhaps simpler, but profound. Human connections and community aren't obstacles to fulfillment or adventure. They're the essential foundations. They're what allow for authentic, reasonably safe adventure and meaningful relationships. This book feels like a powerful argument against self-imposed isolation. If you seek total freedom by cutting off all outside perspective, you often end up creating the most dangerous constraint of all, the echo chamber of your own making.
This has been a truly fascinating deep dive into the complexity of love, obsession, and survival right on the edge.
Yeah, we hope you gain some insights into how human bonds hold up or sometimes tragically fail under the most extreme kinds of pressure imaginable.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.